KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
In 20 minutes.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. 10,000 librarians are in Seattle for the midwinter meeting of the American Library Association. Last night, Caroline Kennedy told them libraries hold the power to transform lives and break down barriers. So it's no wonder that they often come under attack. What are the challenges for libraries in 2013? Maureen Sullivan, president of the American Library Association, joins us. The American Library Association was founded in 1876 to provide libraries and librarians with support. Before leading the American Library Association, Maureen Sullivan was human resources administrator for the libraries at the University of Maryland and Yale University. Thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
So do you see evidence of what Caroline Kennedy was talking about last night because of the power of libraries to break down barriers? They, in turn, often come under attack.
Yes. And I think libraries are critical in any community in which they exist because they are places where anyone is welcome and certainly feels welcome. And I think the attack sometimes comes from the fact that we serve a very diverse population. We are deeply committed to intellectual freedom and everyone's right to read, which means that libraries are often carrying materials that some people in the community will object to. And I presume that's what you mean by under attack.
I don't know, but that's what she said, but that's what you take by that. There are also some books that are under attack, including some written by Seattle authors.
And we take very seriously censorship. We're very much against censorship because of what I just said. Everyone has a right to read. And because we're so deeply committed to that, literacy is very important to us. We work with teachers at all levels and certainly with students throughout the course of their education to ensure that they are reading, that they're developing critical thinking skills, and that they understand the range of resources and materials that are available to them. One of the best things about any library is when you go to that library, whether virtually or in person, it opens your eyes to a wealth of information and I think often fun books to read.
Seattle's been very generous with its library. Citizens have voted increases for it. I understand that the Seattle library system was noted as having a big increase in the number of books, much more so than other libraries around the country. But is that the case around the country? How have libraries fared in the Great Recession?
It varies, and you should be very proud to have the public library that you have here in Seattle. It's not only the support from the community, but it's the kind of leadership that you've had both from the administrators, but also from the board of the public library. But there are many places, and particularly schools in different parts of the country, where administrators, as a cost-saving measure and without understanding how it is that the school library really makes a difference in student learning, have often just removed that portion of their budget, and it's resulted in the closing of school libraries. It's one of the most serious challenges we face.
How about public library systems? I seem to recall in Oregon, a system ended up having to close because voters wouldn't approve a levy, or at least there was a threat of that. Are you seeing that too?
That's happened in some locations, and whenever we get word of this, we move very quickly to support people at the local level to make the case to those decision makers, not only the implications of that choice short term, but the long term implications. Everyone in this country has a responsibility to ensure that we have an informed populace and that really to understand that libraries are central to democracy. And that's because of the value that we hold and all of the work that we do to ensure open access to information.
Maureen Sullivan is my guest, president of the American Library Association. She and 10,000 other people involved with libraries are here in Seattle this week for their midwinter conference. If you've got a question for her, it's 206-543-5869. That's 206-543-KUOW. It's 800-289-5869. Write to us, conversation at KUOW.org. So on our Facebook page, we just put up a question. Are libraries still necessary? You'll be pleased to hear that most of the answers were just yes. But there were variations on that. Emmett wrote, yes, what we don't necessarily need are huge buildings full of books. What do you think about that?
I think that is a perspective that is worth paying attention to because there are libraries already that are looking at different uses of the facility. And one of the most interesting questions that some librarians are facing is how to determine what the future use and the possibilities are of the library. Because our the needs and interests of people in our communities are changing, and also the increase in the amount of information available through digital content. And the way I view it is, it's really creating the opportunity for every library to think about what is the best use of that physical facility for its users, its patrons. And one of the most interesting movements is the makerspace movement, where libraries are setting aside places for people in the community to come together and create whatever it is that they might want to create. Many libraries have recognized that there is this opportunity to be the convener of community conversation and community engagement, and the library often will offer the meeting space, the facility, for that purpose. And I think increasingly we're going to see libraries looking carefully at what is it that we want to ensure we have available in our print collections, and what is it that we want to make sure we also have available in our digital collections.
Now, I'm a big fan of the Seattle Public Library, and I've begun to take out some e-books. But I noticed it's not a really great collection, and I understand that's pretty much true across the board. Although there are a lot of electronic books out there, libraries are having a hard time getting access to them.
And I'll sum it up in one key phrase, and this is really what we want as librarians and as the American Library Association. We want every publisher to provide equitable access to libraries at a reasonable price. The challenge that we face is particularly with the big six publishers being able to get their material, and there are several of them that do sell their books and particularly their front list to libraries, but at a much higher price than the print book. And we're seeing an increase in the number of our readers who want the opportunity for the ebook version, sometimes as well as the print version.
I'm sorry, what's the front list? I don't know.
The front list is the publications that first come out, the bestsellers, is one way to think about that.
Now, I understand in Texas they've just announced an all-digital library. It's going to look like an Apple store. Is that the future of libraries?
It might be, but it isn't going to happen that fast. And this, of course, is a branch of the San Antonio Public Library System, and they're experimenting with that and believe that that's going to have a real appeal for some segments of their community. But even in San Antonio, there's a recognition that that would not today be for everyone.
Part of your constituency at the American Library Association is librarians. And I noticed the School for Librarians here at the University of Washington changed their name. I think they're the Information School now. So how are these changes affecting the skills necessary for librarians to have? And are they getting the kind of training they need to make these adjustments?
I think we're seeing some of what we used to call library schools changing their name because the curriculum is becoming more focused on information. And there is an interest in being able to attract a broader group of students. It also correlates to what we're seeing changing in the work that librarians do. And I'll cite a couple of those changes for you. Most librarians today recognize that they need to be adept with a variety of different types of technology. Many of them are involved day-to-day in adapting based on what their users, the people in the community, need. But it's also the case that we're seeing a set of core competencies that we've always seen in the field carry forward. And the set that I always think of first is would include the ability to connect with and relate to everyone in the community, whether it's a young child or it's a senior citizen, and to understand the different preferences and patterns of use and be able to design our systems and programs around that.
If you've got a question or comment from Marian Sullivan, president of the American Library Association, we're at 206-543-5869. You spoke a moment ago eloquently about the importance of providing access to people and access to information in libraries. Well, it was just about a year ago that we talked to a mother who went to Seattle's Lake City Public Library with her 7 and 10-year-old daughters. And she told us she saw a man watching explicitly hardcore pornography on a computer screen that was facing outward toward the public space. And it prompted a conversation on this show about free speech versus protecting children and creating an uncomfortable environment for other patrons. And I don't think we're the only place this has come up. How do you thread the needle on that one?
That's a very big challenge. And in most cases, the way the library, as you put it, threads the needle is we start by recognizing we continue to have that deep commitment to freedom of access to information. But we also understand that there are limits to that. So my guess is that would mean that the library would begin to look at how do we enable some of our patrons to use the computer for whatever they wish, but make sure that it's happening in a way that we're not exposing young children to that.
And that kind of can present its own problems. You don't want the porn corner over there where those guys are hanging out.
Exactly.
Yeah. So have you talked to people at libraries who've really been successful at turning this around? Maybe there was a complaint and they figured out a solution to it that has worked for all parties.
And often what it leads to is conversations in the community and particularly involvement of the library board in exactly this issue. How is it that we in this community are going to find a way to meet these competing needs? And certainly librarians are very supportive of what it is that parents are trying to do in order to ensure that their children are developing most effectively.
When you look across the country at libraries, what percentage of them would you guess have the kind of open access policy that we do here in Seattle, where patrons can come in and look at whatever they like to do? I mean, aside from child porn, which is against the law, do most libraries have that policy? Do few libraries have that policy?
It's a core value of the profession. So, yes, I would expect just about every library would have that policy, and that every library also would have gone through a careful thought and planning process to consider how they would address exactly the issues that you're raising.
That really surprises me. I would think that libraries in more conservative regions of the country, as soon as that would start to happen, would want to crack down on it. But you don't see that?
Certainly that response happens. But
yeah,
as the librarians work through that, and particularly engage the different voices in the community, most often the result is an understanding of the importance of not restricting access to a particular reader.
I mean, another aspect of libraries' access is that it's access for everyone. And so many homeless people go to libraries and spend a great deal of time there. How does the public library sort of balance its core duty with the fact that sometimes it's maybe being called upon to provide some social services to people who have no place else to go?
You bring up one of the things that I think is really special about public libraries in this country and in other countries, and that is we welcome anyone who wants to come to us for whatever their purpose would be. And particularly if it's individuals who do not have a home, it becomes especially important for us to be sensitive to what their needs might be. And there are libraries that have moved in the direction of partnering with social service agencies. So when those needs come to the fore, the librarians are ready to make those referrals. But we are also very careful to be respectful of the individual and their choice, because not everyone who would come in who would not live in a home would welcome that kind of, and it would almost be seen as an intrusion by some. So it's really a skill in being sensitive and being ready to respond when the need presents itself.
Maureen Sullivan, what's the buzz in the hallways at the American Library Association midwinter meeting? Are there particular issues that people really want to talk about?
Well, we've already identified a couple of them.
Yeah.
One of them is the continuing challenge we have with ebooks and making them available to our readers. Another one of them is exactly what you just raised, and that is how do we continue to effectively meet the needs of the range of users, particularly individuals who are without homes? And the other one that I'm particularly proud of at this conference is for the first time, we offered a series of major programs under the theme, The Promise of Libraries Transforming Communities. There's been a real movement in this country to engage more communities in conversations. Sometimes the term deliberative dialogue is used to bring people together, give opportunity for expression of different points of view, to really focus on how can we improve this community. And some of us have this vision that the very best place for these conversations to take place is the library. And I'm especially proud that Peggy Holman, who lives here in Seattle, was one of our speakers, actually did two sessions for us. And Peter Block, who has published books on community, was my president's program speaker yesterday. And then we're entering into a partnership with the Harwood Institute for Public Innovation. And Rich Harwood came to the conference to describe his approach to community conversations. And all of this is going to enable us as an association to create a mechanism and different tools and techniques to strengthen what the library can be in its community. But it has already led people who participated in these programs to be prepared to go home and to start some of these conversations on a smaller scale, because there is a deep yearning in this country for communities to come together to have a better life for all of us. I think many of us are tired of the conflict, the strife, the kind of hostile language that's being used. And certainly we want for ourselves as well as for our children a better experience. And this country continues to have the capacity to be so much better than it is. And I see libraries as facilitators of that.
And certainly that happens here. In fact, KUOW, Ashley Ahern, our environmental reporter, was at the Ballard Public Library convening a session on the whole coal train issue, which is huge here. But it kind of puts libraries in an interesting situation if they're going to convene discussions of hot public issues, because they're hot public issues. And people might disagree with the format. They might disagree with the speakers. They might disagree with why wasn't my person there. You're almost putting yourselves into an editorial situation, although your goal is to be fair. You might not be seen that way.
Possibly. But here's why I'm optimistic that that is not going to happen in most situations. The library is a trusted organization in every community. And the librarians and the library staff who work in these institutions are very careful to represent the needs of everyone in the community. And what I'm imagining, and this is what Peter Block talked about yesterday, is that we move into the role of the convener and the facilitator, where our skills are around creating the space for people to express different points of view. And our members leaving this conference are walking away with tools and guidelines for how to do this effectively, including how to deal with the challenging, perhaps strident voice in the room.
Good luck with that. I mean, it can be well done, and yet the facilitator often is the object of the bricks flying through the air. But libraries, as you say, are a trusted place in most communities, and it's a great place to get that started. Maureen Sullivan, we really appreciate you taking the time to join us today.
Absolutely my privilege. Thank you.
Maureen Sullivan, she's president of the American Library Association. She and 9,999 other librarians are in Seattle for their midwinter meeting of the ALA. From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.